And when I was able to change, like, I kind of just did a 180, and I was like, you know, I got to stop complaining about this. This is a privilege that I get to teach my child to read. Yeah, this is hard right now, but he's gonna get it someday before he's 18, I hope, right? Like if we need to bring in outside help, that's okay, but we're gonna take this one day at a time. And I changed my attitude, and you know what happened? Like our sessions together, my son and I reading, like the tone just changed, right? Like I didn't actually change, but I was never saying these things to him, but I was complaining about him. Right? Gossiping about him in my conversations with other moms. But when I stopped and just started being grateful, oh, you guys, like it changed our relationship. And then reading was actually much easier because my mindset was, okay, no, good. I'm not going to complain. I'm thankful. So yeah, it's a real thing for us homeschool moms for sure. And dads.
That's Heather Creekmore. She's a homeschool mom of four, blogger, public speaker, and author. Heather's focus is on the pitfalls of comparison and how an unhealthy obsession with looking at what we don't have can lead to many issues that will eventually filter down to our children. So grab a seat by the fire as we discuss her book, her struggles, and how happiness can be achieved by something as simple as gratefulness for a cup of coffee or time spent with family. Okay, we'd like to welcome Heather Creekmore to our show. How are you doing, Heather?
I'm great. It's great to be with you guys.
Yeah, it's nice to meet you. We are, you're down in Austin, Texas with probably some sun, and we're up here in cloudy Cleveland that we just spoke about that, right?
Yes. It rained all morning, but the sun is coming out because, you know, it is Texas. So the sun does shine here more than other places. It's God's little spotlight right on us, I think.
Is the sun bigger in Texas as well?
Everything's bigger in Texas, for sure. Yes.
Better. Everything's just better for some odd reason. We don't know why. It just is.
See, I'm not a native Texan, so I can say that jokingly. If I was a native Texan, like, I'd be getting really serious with you right now. But I'm from the East Coast, so I'm like, yeah, whatevs. Everything's better in Texas.
We have friends from Texas, and they feel very strongly about it. We like to joke.
Let me tell you, like, I'm from Pennsylvania, and being from Pennsylvania, there's no such thing as a proud Pennsylvanian bumper sticker. Like, doesn't exist. You probably, in Ohio, there's probably no proud Ohioan bumper sticker that exists. You don't get that on your license plate. But down here, I wasn't born in Texas, but I got here as fast as I could. That's your mantra. So.
Well, the claim to fame in Cleveland is that the river caught on fire at some point in history. So,
awesome. Hey,
well, we love living here. We do. We actually do love Cleveland. It's a pretty awesome place to be.
Mm-hmm. I've heard great.
Yes, I have not seen a bumper sticker yet.
You could start one. Maybe there's a pent-up demand for this. It's your next business opportunity.
Probably.
Yes. So we always like to start off with an introduction. Among other things, you are the author of The Burden of Better, which is the book you sent us and that we read. But can you please tell us a little bit about yourself, your family, and what it is that you do?
Sure. So I am the mom of four kids, and I've been homeschooling for, this is our eighth year right now. And the crazy thing is, it was the year I took my kids out of school. My son was in first grade. It was October first grade, and my daughter had just started kindergarten. She got a solid 2 months of public school kindergarten in. And I felt like, okay, we need to make a change. And I put my kids out of school, and that year I started writing. So most people freak out, like, if I homeschool, I'll never be able to do anything again, ever. And that was the year I started writing. And so I wrote a book that year.
Wow.
Called Compared to Who? And it was published a couple years later. And so I am a homeschool mom, but also kind of a work at home mom. I do writing for companies, and then I write books myself. I have a podcast myself, and I write a blog called Compared to Who? And I'm married to a pastor. He was a Marine fighter pilot. So we had a little change of course there. I married a Marine fighter pilot, and a couple years later, we ended up married to a pastor. So you can kind of try to reconcile those two things, but no, it's all good. And
that's only for people who ever hung out with a Marine before.
Right, Right, right. But he got saved during Operation Enduring Freedom over in Kyrgyzstan, where he was stationed, and God changed his life and changed his heart and moved us out of military life and military retirement, which would have been a really nice thing, and into ministry. But it's all been good. It's been good to follow his plans. So yeah, that's a little bit about me. We live in Austin, Texas. My husband's in full-time ministry. He's a pastor, and we're just, you know, doing the parents and family and ministry thing all at once.
Wow. What, how old are your kids?
They are 9 in fourth grade, 11 in fifth grade, almost 13 in seventh grade, and 14 in eighth grade. So we had 4 kids in 5 years. I had 4 and under for a couple months. Oh, so God. We just bang, 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 got it done. So,
you brave woman.
You know, though, for homeschooling, it's so perfect.
Oh, I bet. Yeah,
I'm
for
so
that.
Thankful. Because they're so close in age that, you know, sometimes we're doing the same things, but just they can play together. They can entertain each other. It's just worked out really well. I'm really, really grateful that we did it that way. Not that it can't work if you do it another way, but I'm just, for us at first, I mean, this first couple of years were hard.
Yeah.
but then after they can all, you know, go to the bathroom by themselves, fill up their own sippy cups and then things get a little easier.
Out of the trenches.
Right, right.
All right, so you the book that you mentioned, The Burden of Better, you had sent that to us, and I asked for a couple weeks to read through it. And so can you tell us a little bit about the book and why you wrote it?
Sure. So, part of the reason why I wrote it was my first book is called Compared to Who, and it's really a book about body image issues. But a lot of people said, oh, it's a book about comparison. You have to be like, well, no, it's actually not. And so there was kind of this demand for, well, we need a book about comparison in general. Not everyone struggles with the way they look. So can you broaden it a little bit? So that was part of it. And then the other part of it was just seeing, just in ministry and in life, how many conversations I was in with Christian women where it was all comparison, mm-hmm. right? And just seeing how this was affecting people around me. And then just knowing that we have a global pandemic about social media and scrolling and seeing everyone else's lives and, you know, and thinking everyone's lives are better than our lives. And so I looked around and I was like, you know, I really need to address this issue, but I'll be honest with you. I was like, I have no idea what the cure for comparison is. Like, okay, God, if you want me to write a book on this, like, you're going to have to like, show me something. Cause I don't know. In fact, the first day I sat down to write this book, I had an email alert pop up on my screen, and it was about a new book on comparison. And so I was like, forget it, I'm done. There's already a book on comparison. I probably can't compare to her. Like she's a much better author than I am. So I mean, it was just the height of irony. And it took me like an hour that day, just kind of like walk around and be like, okay, wait, if I really believe what I think I believe about comparison, need to go ahead and just do this anyway. Mm-hmm. So the book's about comparison, but it's really about grace, which is what I feel like God showed me was the cure for comparison. So I was raised in a Christian home, but grace wasn't really emphasized in a way, or if it was, I just missed it, but it wasn't emphasized in a way that cured kind of common things, if you will. Like I knew that I had a ticket to heaven, you know, saving grace. Like I knew like ultimately I was okay, but I didn't really know how to apply grace to my day-to-day life in a way that would help me really kind of suffocate or at least stifle those voices in my head and that internal drive for like, this should be better. This should be better. Got to be my best. You know, all the cultural messages of, you know, go for the gold, you know, be the best you, like all of those pressures were just resting on me in a very heavy way. And I didn't know how to apply like the truth of the Bible to basically like relieve myself of all of that pressure.
Right. So when you sent us the book and we were looking at, we're trying to set something up here for a conversation, we just hadn't had a conversation like this before on the podcast. So we were trying to figure out how to, you know, work it in as far as question wise, like how can we relate this to what we kind of talk about normally. And the more we spoke about it, we said, you know, that this is a big deal. We have three kids, and a big issue with kids, not just adults, but with kids as well, is that them comparing themselves to others and what they see online, a lot of social media stuff, which we talk about actually quite a bit. And we said, well, actually this kind of fits in perfectly with this is absolutely education. This is absolutely a parenting issue. Right.
Right.
So I'm the reader in the family. So I got the book, and this is what it looks like after I was done.
If he puts it up to me, we wouldn't have this interview for like another couple months.
I get it. That's awesome.
So I usually read and tab out, and then she goes back and reads like the Cliff Notes for Dummies, like that I set up for her.
You know, there might be a market for that. Maybe I should ask you to send that to me so I can create a Cliff Notes version of it. I love it.
Well, I'll just send this back to you. You can work through my tabs.
I love it.
But I wasn't sure what to expect when I read your book, but you hooked me right off the bat, and I want to read you the excerpt that really hooked me in.
Okay.
To every woman, young or advanced in years, who through the common act of comparing herself to another woman has ever felt compelled, pressured, forced, driven, obliged, required, urged, or prompted to be better. That really hit home with me. Okay. But
you read it to me and I was cracking up. I was like, oh, you're in for it with starting off with for every woman.
I was too gender exclusive there. I'm so sorry.
So right off the bat, when I read that, I was like, Anita, you sure you want me reading this book and tabbing it out? But I did. And all joking aside, I really enjoyed it. It was actually, you're hilarious, by the way.
Yeah. Thank you.
Yeah, you are. I kept cracking up, and then she would ask what I was reading and I'd read it out to her. But besides the beginning there where you kind of have a focus on women, other than that, For me, it was a really great book on the reality of, you know, mindset and how people really think. And, you know, it hits everybody. Mm-hmm. As much as people say you don't care about what other people think, most of the time that's a lie. Yeah. Some people are much better than others, but people will still compare themselves to others. And it's like, can be very detrimental. It can like stifle your life and cause a ton of issues. So yeah, so I read through, I really enjoyed it. It was great. And so once I started reading, I actually told her, I said, you know what? I think this would actually be a really great conversation, because I still wasn't sure. Not that it wouldn't be a great conversation talking to you, but I meant for what we usually talk about on here.
Yeah.
And we read through, and we're like, yeah, this is going to be an awesome conversation. This is some really important stuff, especially for our kids. That's like one of my number one fears for our kids. And I actually hammer it home to him all the time, is don't care what anybody else thinks. You know, our kids will ask, what about wearing, maybe something that they're wearing or something that they're doing. And I say, it doesn't matter. It doesn't matter what anybody else thinks. Do you like it? Do you enjoy doing that? Then that's all that matters. Okay. Because there's going to be people, including myself when I was a kid, that I wouldn't do certain things because I wondered what somebody else would think about me. And I look back and think, man, I missed out on that opportunity because I was too worried about what somebody else thought of me that has no meaning in my life whatsoever. Right. And probably wasn't thinking about me to begin with.
Right.
So,
there. Yeah.
You know, in the book, you do a great job of describing the little ways that we end up comparing ourselves to other people, and in very funny ways, but they're serious, right? Can you give some examples of that, like, comparison trap that we kind of all fall into?
Sure. I mean, well, I think physically, right, we are always comparing ourselves to the way others look, right? That's kind of the surface one, if you will. But beyond that, especially as homeschool parents, oh my goodness, you know, you go to co-op and that kid knows all the answers and your kid knows none of the answers. And it is like, I mean, I have sat there spinning for the whole day. Like when we get home, we're going to do things different. We're going to wake up at 7 and we're going to hit the books for 3 hours, you know, like all these, like I start scheming all these unrealistic things that we could do so that my kid can be like that kid. Mm-hmm. Never mind the fact that God didn't make my kid like that kid. Never mind the fact that my child has areas in which they excel that might be different than the other child's areas, but all of that just gets flown out the window because we start comparing. I mean, we compare what our homes look like, we compare our marriages, right? Like you're scrolling and you're like, oh wow, what a nice, like they went together to the Caribbean without kids. Oh, and you're like, so, and you have plans like the next night for date night that you were so excited about, you're just going out to dinner to a restaurant, and all of a sudden your date night is not good enough anymore, right? Because they went to the Caribbean without kids. You're like, it skews our perspective on the whole world around us when we compare. I mean, we do it in every area. And then the other area we do it in, and this is in the book too, but you know, we have these ideals in our heads. And I think especially as parents, right? We have ideals for ourselves, but we also have ideals of this is what parenting will look like, or this is what homeschooling will look like, or this is what my children will look like when they're at this age or this age or this age. And I don't mean physically look like, I mean, like, this is what they'll be able to accomplish. This is how they'll behave. And all these ideals that we are constantly comparing our reality to this ideal world that lives in our head, like those are detrimental too. So yeah, it affects our lives in every way.
Yeah, I felt like out of all of those, if I were to say that I fell under one the most, it was that chapter where it was the ideal me, because mm-hmm. I feel like that's the one I'm not really necessarily ever comparing myself to another woman or, you know, another person, but it's that ideal me in my head that I will get down on myself. Like the perfect me would be the one checking off all those boxes every day. And it's not happening. And then I get like down on myself because why can't I be that person? Like right. Where am I failing here? So that one like really hit home with me. And then of course, yes, with the homeschooling, you're right. Like whether it is when you go to co-op and yeah, you know, Johnny's way smarter than ours, or she's got it all together, very well put, or it's the post that you see, which I feel like are the most poison when you see the post, because you think you take that one picture or that one post about this awesome day or this very organized assignment that the kids did or a project that they did, and you automatically assume that it's like that all the time for that family. Right. And you forget that like that was just one glimpse, right? And half the time it's probably staged. Mm-hmm. But we allow it to creep into our thoughts and be like, man, why can't we be like that? And it's funny. It's even as far as even if you are a relaxed homeschooler who unschools, mm-hmm. you can still find yourself comparing yourself to those that are kind of under that same type of homeschooling. Like, oh, well, she's way more, you know, free and way more confident in her way of teaching her kids than I am. I mean, you just see it on all different levels.
They absolutely. Way harder than we did.
Right. Yeah. Like,
hey, oh boy. Everyone working guilty there. Or those perfect schoolroom pictures. Like, I just wanted to show you all my schoolroom. I'm like, would you like to see my schoolroom? It's the dining room table and it is a wreck. And there are no alphabet letters on my wall anywhere. I mean, we're past that stage, but like never had it. I couldn't pull it off. Mm-hmm. I mean, I would buy things to organize. Like every September I fell into the trap of this is going to be the year. Like, we are going to be organized. Everyone's going to have a schedule. We are going to be awesome. Yes. And it lasts like, it doesn't even last a week most of the time, you guys. Like by the end of week one, everyone's like, where's our schedule, mom? I'm like, I needed to laminate it. If I just laminated it, then that's where I went wrong. But no, like we can't find the schedule. We can't find their books that I bought them like for the extra enrichments to add on to the curriculum we're doing. I mean, it's
And it's, if you can make yourself crazy, and that, yes. And it just, it distracts, you know, like you were saying early on, Nathan, like this is something we need to teach our children, right? But we can get so caught up with trying to teach our children in the way that it seems like everyone else around us is doing it, that we miss the opportunities to just engage with them on a heart level and work on this character stuff, right? Because what's most important, I have a friend that runs a ministry called Heaven, Not Harvard. It's like, what's most important at the end of the day is that our kids are on the track that God has put them on, operating the way that God has made them. I mean, if they have great academic success and miss everything else, they've missed it.
Absolutely, yeah. Yeah. Yeah, I don't know why I just thought of this, but what you two were just talking about. Have you ever seen the movie Envy with, it has Jack Black and who is it from the Night of the Museum?
Oh, gosh.
Oh, Ben Stiller.
Okay. So, yeah. So Jack Black invents a machine that makes dog poo disappear, right? Okay. This is a silly movie.
Okay. And sounds like I need to see it though.
Ben Stiller had a chance to get in on this product, but he didn't because he's a very squared away person, doesn't do anything, you know, off the wall. Well, Jack Black becomes massively rich. And so he's in his small house looking over at the giant mansion now across the street. He goes over for dinner and the Jack Black son is playing like the violin or the piano or something now. And his son's like banging on a trash can lid as like a drum. Uh-huh. And the whole movie is about being envious and, you know, comparing himself to like how his buddy now is, all these things are so much better in his life. And in the end, it all comes crashing down and he ends up in the same spot that he was before. And he realizes that it was just very temporary and it wasn't real. It's a silly movie. It's kind of funny, but it actually shows you how you end up every little thing that the other person's doing is, well, that kid, his kid's smarter than mine. His kid plays the instrument better than mine. His house is bigger, and it just snowballs. But anyway,
I think it's a great
the rabbit hole there.
I love that. Yeah, I forgot about that movie.
It sounds awesome. Sounds like I should have
actually with that.
I should have quoted it in the book. It sounds like.
I know, right?
Missed opportunity there.
It reminds me. There's a clip in the movie where the kids are like, "Flan, flan," because they're snacking on flan, like a very nice, extravagant dessert. Uh-huh. Where it reminded me of your book. The mom who makes the homemade chicken nuggets. Mm. Meanwhile, you've lost track with how many granola bars your kids have eaten.
Right. That's
us. Our toddler with the granola bars.
He's out of control.
Oh, yeah. That if I do the math on the number of granola bars I buy, I don't know. We might be at 4 a day per person some days. And I'm someone's gonna call CPS on me for overfeeding my children granola bars. But
anyway. I like to call it survival.
Right. That's exactly what it is. You know, yeah. I mean, there are worse things they could be eating.
Yes, you have to pick your battles, you know? Right. So, you know, at the end of the day, sometimes go ahead, get that other granola bar while we focus on some real important things here in life.
Right.
So, well, this is a statement from your book, which we actually really loved. And it said, comparison not only robs us of our health, but it also stops us from writing that book, taking that trip, applying for that job, or running that marathon. So if we could just go a little bit more into how comparing yourself to others can become destructive, that would be great.
Yeah. So I think that quote followed some science that I had in the book. There's so much science behind what comparison is actually doing to us. Early on in the book, I talk about how they studied primates, but how kind of just looking at someone and feeling jealous or envious can rewire your brain into thinking that you've actually been rejected. And so like there's a lot behind this that we don't even realize is going on when we have these thoughts. But to that statement specifically, I think they had studied what happens when people spend a lot of time on social media, right? And how comparison actually impacted their actions. And I mean, it's it's the science is there to prove that if you spend a lot of time thinking about how you compare to other people, you're not going to do things that you want to or feel called to do. I mean, I think writing the book, I kind of already shared my writing the book example, right? Like I almost didn't write a book on comparison because someone else had already written a book on comparison. But I mean, just in every way, I just wonder to what extent even people give up on homeschooling because of this very thing. Right? Like they do it for a year. They feel like they're not as great as all the other moms in co-op or the, you know, they don't have what the other moms on social media and their, you know, regional homeschool Facebook group say that they have and do. And they're like, I'm out. Like, I can't compete. Forget it. I'm just throwing them back in school because, you know, so it does, it has an impact on the way we think and then also what we do. And that can be destructive.
Mm-hmm. Which altogether ends up being your health, your mental health, your physical health.
Yeah, right. I think the example you gave of the research was it the if it was a chimpanzee or something. Mm-hmm. But okay, so yeah, I found that really interesting. It was so they would give the chimpanzee some sort of, I think it was a vegetable or something, and he was super pumped about it and happy until he saw the buddy next to him. He gets the grape. Mm-hmm. And now the vegetable is not good enough anymore.
Right.
He wants the grape. And now he had a shift in his mind that something that made him really happy before is no longer good enough because somebody next to him is getting something what he perceives as better, which is exactly what we all do. Yeah.
Right. Exactly. Yeah. You know, and how sad is it in a way? I mean, it's, you know, it, because there's a lot that we have to be grateful for and to, you know, be joyful about, but like the monkey in the cage, we look next to us and like, oh, looks like they're having more fun than I am. You know, looks like their lives are better. Oh, wow. They must have a better marriage than we do because he opened the door for her, whatever. We look out our window and we think these things and we miss out on the joy right in front of us.
Absolutely.
Yes.
Yeah. I always like to say, especially in this country, you know, if you've ever been to a third world country, you know, your husband, especially the places that he's been deployed to, we still do, unfortunately, but it gives you a better concept of what not having a lot really means.
Right.
We have so much.
Right.
And I try to remind myself of that whenever I do that, where I'm like, man, I wish I had a nicer whatever. Mm-hmm. And I think of people that I've seen in other countries and I realize like, how sad is it that I think that way. They look at me like if they saw what I had,
give it all.
They'd think I was one of the richest people in the world.
Right.
And it's trying to find a way to be really happy with what you have and where you are is, I think that's the heart. That's the place where people struggle because you're constantly like inundated with images of stuff that seems to be better, just like the grape.
Right.
And you're constantly fed it now with social media. It's like, you look on, you're like, I love my truck until you see the truck online. You're like, well, my truck's pretty crummy compared to that.
Right.
You know, or whatever it is, your house, your, you know, like you said, your marriage, just material things that don't really matter in the end anyway.
Right. Yeah. My husband went to Turkey, I guess it was the year I was writing the book, and he sent a picture of him with a bunch of kids. And, you know, I don't know that they were, it wasn't an orphanage situation, but they were, you know, it was a very poor area. Mm-hmm. And this one little boy in the front had on a t-shirt with Elsa from Frozen on it. And I, you know, I looked at the pictures like, oh, look at those kids. They look so happy and smiley. And I was like, this one little boy in the front, just big old smile, ear to ear with this Elsa t-shirt on. And I just looked at that little boy and I thought, if one of my boys had on an Elsa t-shirt, they would not be smiling. Mm-hmm. They would be fussing and complaining about the implications of what did it mean for them to have it. You know, oh, they can't support a Disney princess. You know, they're boys and they don't like Disney princesses. And why would they wear Elsa? And I mean, they would have griped and complained, but like for all I know, that's the only shirt this kid had. Mm-hmm. Right? Or maybe it's his favorite one because it was American, right? You know, like maybe that was cool because it was American, like cultural context. I'm not fully sure what it meant to him, but I just thought he's just happy. He's happy to have a shirt on. He's happy to just be there. Like, just the pure expression of happiness in his smile was so evident. And, you know, and we could learn something from that, right?
Right? Absolutely.
So I feel like some people think that having a form of competitiveness is good. Do you think that there's a place for comparison when it comes to driving you or self-motivation to improve yourself?
So here's how I like to break that down, right? Like, goals are good, but when our goals become ultimate things, like when our goals become the most important thing, then I think our life is out of whack, right? So for example, I work with a lot of women that feel like they need to change the size of their body. Okay. But what happens is when you go on a diet or when you decide that you are going to be a different size, this can sometimes and oftentimes consume you, right? And so then the most important thing is my new eating plan and my new exercise plan. And especially in the context of homeschooling, right? Like, I know some of your listeners can probably relate to this. You it's January 1st, January 2nd, probably, you start the new program and like day two, like, you know, a kid needs something urgently or is throwing up or something and you were about to go for your workout. Kid messing up my goals, right? You know, day four, like, you're doing great on your eating plan and kid, oh, it's Girl Scout cookie time, right? Kid comes home with all the Girl Scout cookies. Kid, you're messing up my plan, right? And so all of a sudden our hearts very subtly, but very genuinely shift, right? Because then instead of like, mom, you know, one of my greatest responsibilities and privileges is to be your mom and to like shepherd you on this journey. It goes from like, you are getting in the way of my life, right? And so I think as long as we can keep our goals in the proper place with our priorities, right? I think when our goals kind of like, whoop, this is my goal, this is what's most important in my life, goes to the top of the list and everything shifts down, I think that's when they become a problem. So it's obviously, like, the Bible tells us to, like, you know what you're aiming for. Like, a man who's going to build a tower is going to plan first, right? Like you need a plan to get to a place of change. Like, and, you know, I think we all have areas in which we can improve, right? Like, that's a given. But I think it's making those areas of earthly improvement or humanly improvement, we make those ultimate areas when we make those the most important things, that's when we kind of get ourselves in a trap that can be devastating, right? I can't name for you all of the women I know that have gone like full in on that I'm going to change my body path to the point of detriment. Like, one friend in particular, she was all in with changing her body, all in with the gym. She did, changed her body and got a lot of attention. And then suddenly that attention wasn't as good, or it was better than the attention her husband was giving her. And I mean, what that led to in her life was a very different path than the one she started out on. Mm-hmm. So we have to watch that these goals don't become ultimate things.
I love that. I feel like we talk about that a lot, actually, and it's almost just keeping that balance, because we can bring up somebody maybe who is very successful in their career. And I'll always say, okay, but how's his family life?
Right.
Or, you know, how's this in his life? Because like you said, you put too much focus or too much priority in one thing.
Right.
A lot of times you're giving up and sacrificing a lot more in your life. And so we've always felt that that balance is so important, which I feel like falls along those same lines.
Yeah. So I hate the word balance. Okay. So I just not like, so sorry. here's why I hate it. Okay. So we do classical conversations. So like, I know my timeline now, if any of your listeners do CC, that's probably ringing a bell, but like, I've learned a lot that I didn't learn in my education. Okay. And I got a master's degree in public policy. So some of the stuff I should have learned, but I did not. But I'm getting a second chance to learn all the things with my children. But anyway, balance is actually a concept that comes from the Far East, right? It's Taoism. It's the yin and the yang, you know, that little round symbol thing. Mm-hmm. That's what balance is, right? But God is a God of priorities. He's a God of order. There is an order to things. And so what I like to talk about is putting things in order, right? So to the point with the businessman, it's not that he'll ever find a place where like I spend enough time with my family to balance out enough time at work. Like, it's just not realistic, right? He probably spends 70 hours a week at work. I don't know the math on that, but minus sleeping, he doesn't have another 70 hours to spend with his family. So those scales are never going to balance, ever. Not realistic, right? But how can he reorder his priorities in a way where his family still feels like they're first? What does that look like? Does that mean taking a different kid to breakfast once a week before he starts his 70-hour work week? Does that mean taking 2 hours of intentional time, you know, with his wife, you know, twice a week? Like, what does that look like? And again, the scales are never going to be equal. But if the priority, if the wife goes on the schedule first, if the kids go on the schedule first, then that's going to look a little different for, you know, the way his life feels, the way his family feels, right? And ultimately, I believe that God blesses us when we do things in the priority that he wants us to do them. So that's my take on balance. Sorry.
No, I like it. Yeah.
Everybody has their own opinion. That's why we do this.
Yeah.
Right.
All right. So you did also talk about the scarcity mentality in your book. Can you speak a little on that and how this can be a false reality?
Yeah, absolutely. So scarcity mentality is not my idea. It was Stephen Covey's idea from way back in the day with the seven habits of highly effective people. Okay. And that's been around, I don't know, I think it was a book in the 80s or the 90s. So it's been around for a long time. But I think what happens with the scarcity mentality is we believe that because someone else is already doing that thing that we want to do, that there's like no other spots for it, right? Like, so with my writing the book on comparison, that there's no room for another book on comparison because there's already a book on comparison. It can apply to everything, right? Like singing, right? Like, oh, she's a great singer. Well, I might as well not even sing because she's such a great singer. Or, you know, with really any area that our kids want to excel in, right? Like, oh, I want to do drama. Oh, yeah, but my friend Molly, she's really good at drama. So I shouldn't bother doing drama. I need to do something else. And you can watch, especially in those preteen years, like that's where we're at now. And I'm seeing this happen. Like, oh, well, such and such, well, her thing is baking. So my thing can't be baking. I'm going to have to find another thing. And that, you know, completely destroyed our science fair project because of that mentality. But that's another long story. It's a sad story. But you can see it in teenagers so clearly where you're like, oh, come on, honey, like there's plenty of room for you to do this. Even if your friend's doing it, you're going to do it differently. But with ourselves, we do the same thing, right? Like, well, they're already excelling at that. So I guess I better find something else. Maybe in the realm of podcasting, right? Like there's other podcasts. Why bother?
Yep.
You know? Why bother? Oh, and I mean, for me, like for those of us that are type A, I don't know if this resonates with you guys, but it's like, I can't be number one, so I won't bother. Like, I only want to do it if I can be number one. And you're like, well, there's only like 1.5 million podcasts. What would it take to get to number one? Right? So these mentalities. So scarcity mentality tells us don't bother because there's not enough space for you. Whereas an abundance mentality tells us, that's kind of the opposite of a scarcity mentality. It tells us, you know what? There's plenty of room. Right? Because even when you do that same thing, you are wired differently. You have a different personality. You're going to bring different experiences. Like it's going to be different when you do it. And scarcity mentality, I mean, it's really interesting if you kind of like push it out and think about what it would mean if we all lived under scarcity mentality. It's like, so if only the best singer sang, like radio would be super boring. Right? Like you wouldn't have American Idol or The Voice or any of those shows, right? Because only the best singer can sing, right? Or like if only the best baker baked, be pretty hard to get a birthday cake, right? Like it's ridiculous, right? Like I think intellectually we understand there's room for everyone, but we convince ourselves when it comes to us, well, maybe there's not room for me. And it's just not a helpful thought pattern.
Mm-hmm. I think we've probably definitely done that with even this, the podcast. Yes. Like, well, there's lots of other podcasts that talk about kind of the same thing as far as, you know, whatever, education, parenting, homeschooling. But then we started doing it and it's like, but anyone who ever does this is going to be slightly different. And there's always a group of people who don't really fit into the other podcasts that may like what you have to say, mm-hmm. because you're slightly different, your background, where you come from, and they relate to you. And I know growing up, I always had that mentality, didn't know it mm-hmm. until I got older and started reading more. And when I started reading about the scarcity mentality, that's why I wanted to bring it up when I saw it in your book. The first time I read about it, it really hit home for me because, you know, before that you always think of everything is up high mm-hmm. and there's only these certain amount of slices in a pie, right? So right. How are you going to take another slice of that pie when it seems like that whole pie is already getting eaten?
Right.
Until you realize that pie can be divided into an infinite amount of pieces.
Right.
And like you said, when you really think about it, if people thought that way, Microsoft would be the only company doing what they do, because at first they were the best at it. Who would dare take on Microsoft, right? Who would dare take on Walmart? Who would dare take on on and on? And the funny part is the people who end up at the top aren't usually the people who started it. Mm-hmm. It's people who came about later and adapted what somebody else had already done right. and just kind of tweaked it and made it a little bit better.
Right.
So the scarcity mentality really stops people from going after their dreams, really, like things that they always wanted to do. They see one person do it and like, there's zero way I can ever be that good at it. So why would I do that? And again, the reason I wanted to bring this up is because I think it's part of a kid's education mm-hmm. to, you don't have to bring up you know, the 7 habits of highly effective people to my 6-year-old, but the idea that it doesn't matter what anybody else is doing. Mm-hmm. Don't worry about what that person's doing. Right. You worry about yourself. You, if you want to be good at that, it's up to you to practice or perform or work on that skill until you get to the point where you are happy with it. But don't worry about what's going on around you. Put the blinders on in some ways, put the blinders on what other people are doing around you and focus on you. Cause that's really all that matters. Right. And in the end, you're going to end up where you're supposed to be if you do it that way. So yeah, I think that concept is really important because I think it crushes a lot of people.
Well, just think about like, so I have a daughter that takes voice lessons and her voice is different than a lot of other people's voices. Like she's not trying to imitate a Lauren Daigle or a Carrie Underwood. Like she has her own tone and her voice teacher's like, you have your own tone. It's great. Like, it's awesome. Like you do your thing. And you just think about like people over the years, over the decades, over the centuries that have really stood out as incredible singers to just follow this example. A lot of times it's because they're a little different. Like they had something like, ooh, like that's a recognizable, like, oh, I like that sound. Like that's different than everything else. And so if our kids stop in their tracks because they're like, well, I don't sound just like Taylor Swift, so I shouldn't sing. It's like, no, that's exactly why you probably should sing. I mean, you know, yes. Okay. There's a limit. Like some of us are gifted in areas and some of us are not gifted in areas. So like, you know, if your kid can't like, can't find a note, then maybe you do need to steer them to the drums or something. I don't know. But if they have some talent in that area, like encouraging them, it's okay to be different. Like that's how the greats become the greats, because they had something that was unique. So go with that, pursue that. I think that's a really awesome message we can send our kids.
Yeah. Yeah. Actually, when you said that, it brought up a thought about somebody. I used to listen to my first music that I listened to was my father's like music that I would find. Uh-huh. Do you know who Janis Joplin is?
Uh-huh. Sure. Yeah. She's there. Yeah.
if compared to anybody else, any other woman singer, somebody would have told her there's zero way you would ever be a famous singer. Right. Her voice is so raspy and different, but you know who she is. I know who she is. Right. Most people know who Janis Joplin is, even if they didn't grow up in that time.
Right.
Because her voice was so, you know, unique. So if she listened to the naysayers, she probably would never have sung.
Right.
And another example, I like this one. I was looking through some old, my son found my old baseball cards.
Okay.
And there was a player, his name was Jim Abbott. And he had one he had half an arm on one side.
I think I know exactly who he is. Yep.
And so when he would pitch, he would throw the ball. And as soon as he would throw it, he would take and he would have his glove sitting on the his half arm. And he would switch it over as soon as he threw the ball. And I was telling him the guy's story because I remember it when I was a kid. And same thing. If he had looked at other players when he was growing up and thought, well, how could I ever be as good as that guy? I only have one arm. I'm missing a hand. How could I possibly be a professional baseball player and an all-star at that? Like, he was a good pitcher.
Right.
You know, I think that was a really cool thing that he found that card and I could explain that to him. It doesn't matter. People find ways. You don't have to be like the guy or the girl next to you to be really good at what you want to do. Or even if you're not good at it, you enjoy it. Just keep doing it.
Right. Right. I mean, you know, I think we live in a culture here in America where there is this mentality, and this is kind of why I title my book, The Burden of Better. Like, if you can't be the best, you probably shouldn't do it. Right. And so like, that's why, like, we start, I mean, I live in Texas, the land of professional sports in second grade. Like, by third grade, you're pretty sure your kid's going to the NFL. Right. And so, I mean, it's insanity, right? That we can't just allow them to try things and have fun. And even if they're not going to be the best at it, even if they're not going to be like first chair in the orchestra or first string, you know, in baseball or whatever, like just enjoy it. Just experiment. Just have a good time learning a new skill, playing a team sport. You know, forget the, oh, my kid's never going to make it to the pros. We should pull them out right now. It's a waste of money. No, don't do it for that reason. Allow them to enjoy it.
Yeah.
I just have to add in for our listeners, like, you with baking. What about your starring and Nailed It?
Yeah. So
we watched it. We watched
it. You did? Yeah. Yeah. So on Nailed It on Netflix, season 1, episode 1. So actually the inside story is that was recorded as episode 3. But my cake was so bad that they decided to make it the pilot for the whole series. So I'm the very first contestant. And that was the most fun I've ever had. I think in my entire life, my husband gets mad when I say that. it was super fun. Like, I just had a great time. And, you know, and the cool thing is, like, I've always loved baking shows. Like, even before there was food television, like, I would read like the ads in the magazines about the Pillsbury Bake Off and stuff like that, because that's like a real thing. And I would think, oh, that'd be super fun to do that someday. But I'm just not a good baker because I'm not a perfectionist. Like, so measuring, that sounds like a lot of trouble. You know, like, I kind of put the 1 cup scoop in and dig it out. It's like, yeah, it's kind of about the top and throw it in. Like, the whole leveling off of flour. Oh, that's too much time. So anyway, so my baked goods don't always turn out in the perfect way. But yeah, we had a good time. And God found a show that I could actually do, a baking show that was perfect for me. and yeah. So if only the best baker baked, I would not be baking.
Exactly. That was the point of bringing that up. Like, it would be boring, right? They brought on Nailed It for all those who are not perfect, and people love watching that. And then it's just a great example to show to your kids that, hey, I'm not great at this, but I enjoy it. And I'm still going to dive as deep as I could go with this, you know?
Right. Right. Have a good time. Yep.
So all this being said, what do happy people do that miserable people don't, you know, when it comes to all this stuff, like, what do happy people change in their lives, or what are their mindsets?
They're grateful, bottom line. And there's a lot of talk about this now, a lot of, you know, it's kind of a buzzword now, be grateful, gratitude, but we don't actually practice it very well, right? Like, we know it. But gratitude is a discipline. Like, it is something you have to practice. And so what I encourage people to do is just start writing down what you're grateful for every day. It's, you know, it might sound like one more thing. She's making me do one more thing every day. I got a list of things I gotta do. But maybe it's just, you know, we all have our phones. Maybe it's just like making a voice record. Like, here's the 5 things I'm grateful for today. It takes you 7 seconds, you know, and just start a list. Because like the science on this is incredible, you guys, and you saw it in my book. But, you know, people that have been paralyzed in an accident, like car accident, paralyzed car accident victims who practice gratitude are actually happier and mentally healthier than people who've won the lottery. Like they put these two groups together and controlled it and did all this science-y kind of stuff to make sure it was statistically correct. And that's what they found. So, I mean, you know, you think about it. It's like, if you had to just choose who's going to be happier, the person that just won the lottery, right? That's their stereotype of happiness, right? Like we use that as a cliche, like I just won the lottery, like to say that we're happy about something, but that's actually not, these people who have done that, you are not happy. Like that is not the path to happiness. It's actually gratitude. And so just taking time, being grateful for the little things. I mean, you know, I don't know, this just over this past year, man, I've just been really grateful that I have the opportunity to homeschool. I'm grateful that I homeschooled before 2020 happened, right? Like if you can't think of anything else to be grateful for as a homeschool parent, be grateful that you didn't have that abrupt, like band-aid ripped off. Like all of a sudden my kids are home and I don't know what to do. I mean, I don't know about you guys, but like we had like a, what I call the detox period when we first started homeschooling, yeah, where we pulled them out and they had to kind of figure out what it looked like to not be allegiant to the teacher, but to be allegiant to like mom, mm-hmm, and maybe dad too, but mom and primarily as the teacher, right? Mm-hmm. And that was like a transition for us that took several months, if not a full year. Well, all these people who had to just all of a sudden start homeschooling in a flash, they didn't get that, right? And so that's something we can be grateful for. We can be grateful that we live in a country, at least so far, that allows us to homeschool our children, right? Yeah. I live in a state where I don't have anything I have to file to homeschool. So, hey, that is a praise God for Texas. Homeschooling laws here are awesome. So move to Texas if you want freedom in your homeschooling. But like, I can be grateful for that. Like you can be grateful for any range of things. I mean, maybe you're grateful for the sunshine. Maybe you're grateful for the rain. Maybe you're grateful that your child was able to read the three-letter word cat that you've been trying to get them to read for the last 6 weeks and they did it like that. I mean, there's so many little ways we can count our blessings every day. And it adds up. It does. It changes your brain. It rewires your brain, actually, when we're grateful. It does something really healthy inside your head, but it also changes your heart too. I mean, when you look at your kids like you're not doing enough, you're not as good as the other kids in co-op, when you have that attitude, even if you don't use the words, it comes out in what you do and how you instruct them. But if in your heart, in your head, you're saying, I'm so grateful that you're learning to read. I'm so grateful that you're a different student than you were last year. I mean, I've seen that in my kids where from year to year, it's like, oh, whew, I thought we'd never make it, but praise God, who is this child? and just stay like that, okay? So you know, just there's so much, I could go on and on and on, but there's so much we can be grateful for. I mean, just we have to be in the practice of acknowledging those things so that it gets into our hearts and gets into our heads.
Yeah, month or so ago, I recently started doing that. I've journaled since I guess I was in college.
Okay.
But I had read some books and it had mentioned that. So I was like, you know, I'm going to try that. So every night before I go to bed, I've only missed a couple nights because I passed out. But
it happens.
Yeah. I write three things that I'm thankful for in my journal.
Awesome.
And it has helped a lot. And what I find that I write, it's nothing like extraordinary to anybody else, but it would be, you know, my son and I made our first homemade sourdough bread the other day. Like we started a sourdough culture, uh-huh, it, and then we baked a loaf of bread. And to me, like when we baked that together, that was something to be thankful for.
Yeah.
Even I wrote down the other night she doesn't know what I write down, but
no, I just see him do it every night, which I love, but he does not share.
No, you know, it was being able to have time to have like a glass of wine with my wife, mm-hmm, and just like a little bit of time to just sit there and spend some personal time together, which as we all know, sometimes can be pretty tough,
right?
Especially as a military family or not living near your family. We don't have babysitters, you know, we don't have anybody to watch our kids. So we don't go out on dates anymore or in heaven, but those little things. And you just, if you can be thankful for those like tiny moments in life, then you feel thankful for everything. Because if, having a cup of coffee as the sun comes up, or having a cup of coffee together before the kids wake up, or going for a jog in the, we went for a jog in the, in the snow. It was snowing. And to me, that I wrote that one down because it was awesome. It was just the kids were playing. It was me and her, and it was just quiet. And you don't know. Well, you're from Pennsylvania, so you do know. But when it's snowing, there's this peace that you don't really get from anything else. It's just quiet, and you can actually hear the snowfall.
Yeah.
And it's just an awesome. I love that, especially growing up the way, you know, growing up in Massachusetts. I remember that. Mm-hmm. And so us moving back here and getting to experience that again, that was a thankful moment for me.
Yeah.
But when you start writing it down, when you come across those moments during the day, you start to realize, you think about it, you're like, oh yeah, this is pretty cool. Mm-hmm. Something that I would have completely blown off before, not taken a second to think about that this was a special moment. Now you do. Now you take a moment and you realize how great it is that you can read a book to your kids, or you had time to do like a movie night with your kids, or bake the bread with your kids.
Right.
And before it was maybe a nuisance, you know, because it was getting in the way of your goal.
Right.
Or whatever it is you want to fuck off.
Yeah. I'm thinking like you're creating your own mental Instagram feed, right? It's like your own highlights reel every day, right? Sure. But so instead of comparing yourself to, oh, they did this, you're like, oh, look, I had that awesome experience. I had that awesome experience. I had that, like, and it rewires the way you see your life, right? Yes. I love it.
Yeah. What a great way to put that. And somewhere you wrote that in order to stop comparing, we need to find contentment. And that first step to contentment is to stop complaining. Mm-hmm. I absolutely love that. Like, just stop the whining. Right. And what is the opposite of complaints? Gratitude, like you said.
Right.
And it does take it, like you said, it takes a habit to do that. We have to train ourselves, and it's an ongoing process. You won't just like finally get there and then that's it. It's going to be like ongoing in our life to continue to practice that.
Absolutely. Well,
it's funny. I read some research on people that even though if something happened, like if something good happened to somebody they knew, and even if they felt like jealous about it, and even if it was a friend, they were like inside, they felt jealous that friend was doing better than they did. But if they said positive things about the other person, even though inside they felt that way,
right,
over time, right, they became happier and less jealous about things, or less they trained their mind just by doing it, even though it was a conscious effort to do it and it wasn't natural for them to be like, good for you,
right?
But it over time, it literally changed how their mind worked and looked at things.
Absolutely. Yeah. So like I can put that into a real example for homeschool parents. Like, so teaching my middle son to read was horrible. Like my oldest learned to read in preschool and kindergarten, he had it. So I didn't have to really help him very much at all. My daughter, I have no idea how she learned to read, but we read Disney princess books, like when I pulled her out of kindergarten, and I guess she learned enough in preschool that just by reading over and over again, she learned to read somehow. But with my third son, oh my goodness, it was just starting from scratch. I hadn't done a good job with phonics, all the things, okay? And so my heart was kind of bitter about that. I had that learned, I don't know if you guys know that, like a learn to read in 5 minutes a day, 100 easy lessons book.
Yes, I've heard it. Yeah, I've heard about it.
That book has flown across my living room. Like 5 minutes a day, easy, poosh, like this is ridiculous. I mean, just frustration, right? But what I was convicted of was that, so in my heart, I was complaining, this is hard. And then, you know, when I got with my homeschool mom friends, like, oh, he just doesn't get it. It's so frustrating, so hard. Complain, 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 gripe, 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 gripe. And when I was able to change, like, I kind of just did a 180. And I was like, you know what? I got to stop complaining about this. This is a privilege that I get to teach my child to read. yeah, this is hard right now, but he's gonna get it someday before he's 18, I hope, right? Like if we need to bring in outside help, that's okay, but we're gonna take this one day at a time. And I changed my attitude, and you know what happened? Like our sessions together, my son and I reading, like the tone just changed, right? Like I didn't actually change what I was never saying these things to him, but I was complaining about him, right? Gossiping about him in my conversations with other moms. But when I stopped and just started being grateful, oh, you guys, like it changed our relationship. And then reading was actually much easier because my mindset was, okay, no, good. This, I'm not going to complain. This is, I'm thankful. So yeah, it's a real thing for us homeschool moms for sure. And dads.
Yeah, definitely. Well, before we start to wrap it up, I did want to make sure that we honed in on as far as like as parents and making sure that our kids are in a good environment and surrounded in a good mindset. So how important is the language we use in our own household with our children when it comes to, you know, trying to be living more of a comparison-free life?
Right.
And then what are maybe some examples of that toxic language that we should avoid?
Yeah. Can I start with the end? So I feel like saying things like, and I think we know this, I can't start at the end. Sorry, I'll play by your rules. But like thinking about like, you know, just innocently, sometimes we do this like, why can't you just keep your room clean like your sister does? My mm-hmm. house, that would be opposite. It would be, why can't you keep your room clean like your brother does? But you know, like those kind of things where it's like, we're setting it up for comparison, mm-hmm. you know, like, why can't you just get your work done like your sibling does? Or so sometimes we say those things out loud, right? I mean, to a greater extent, I mean, hopefully this isn't where you're at, but you know, hey, why can't you do it like you're the kid at co-op? Like that's all toxic, right? But beyond what we say to them directly, I mean, kids learn a lot by what they see and what they see modeled versus what they hear you saying. Mm-hmm. So for example, right, our kids are under an increasing amount of pressure to look a certain way, especially if you have a daughter, but even more so now with boys, right? So if you are always watching television and saying, oh, she's so pretty. Oh, wow. She's so pretty. Oh, look at, oh, he's, wow. He's really built well. Like if you're constantly commenting on what other people look like, guess what your kids are learning? They're learning that's really important what other people look like, mm-hmm. right? If you're constantly commenting on, oh, you see, oh, they made such good grades. Oh, they, oh, wow. They're such a success. Oh, wow. They're so wealthy. Oh man, that's so successful. Like, boy, that success is that. Like they're learning how to define the world by what they see you appreciating. So even if you're not necessarily using comparison language, like I wish we were as great as them. If that's what you're acknowledging, and if that's what you're aspiring to, if you will, in your language, like I wish our lawn looked as good as theirs does. I mean, that's a ridiculous example, but they're learning, oh, what your lawn looks like is really important. Right. And so someday your kids are going to have a lawn and they're going to have a marriage, they're a fight in their marriage, right? Because your kid thinks that lawn care is super important and their spouse is like, whatevs, I don't care about the lawn. And your kid's like, I have this deep seated, like, oh, I just know that it's very important what our lawn looks like. And they have to go to counseling someday to figure out where this came from. And it comes down to, oh, you know what? Dad always commented on what the other lawns in the neighborhood look like. Right. So, but I mean, this is a little bit of a silly example, but this is what we can do unless we are aware of the ways that we are teaching our kids what is important and teaching them in what areas they need to excel, compete, be the best, because being the best is important. So we have to watch what we model and what we say.
Well, all those lawn people moved to Florida. That's where they live now.
But don't they have like turf down there and sprinkle grass a lot of times?
They're running chemicals on their lawn.
No, they just use sprinklers all day long when the sun's blazing, and then they pour tons of chemicals to make sure the grass stays green all year.
There you go.
So we wanted to ask that question because in our house, language is extremely important. Mm-hmm. And a good example for us that we had an issue with, especially listening to a lot of podcasts, was when this pandemic started, everybody just complained. And I understand there's people who've lost people and there's people who've lost jobs. Right. for people who haven't gone through those things, for the most of us, a lot of things really haven't changed. They've been inconveniences, right?
Right.
So we were very adamant with our, in front of our kids, of not being negative about all of the things that we can't do anymore, which is really the biggest issue around here for us, right? Was right. that there's some inconveniences. And when you listen to certain people, they, oh, I can't do this anymore. I can't wait till this is over because we can't go do this activity anymore. I can't wait till 2021. What's going to happen on January 1st and 2021 starts? Is everything going to change in some way? No, it's not. The only thing that's going to change is the way that your outlook
right.
on life, which has nothing to do with the pandemic anyway. It's just an example I'm using. It has to do with life in general, right? So your outlook on life is what really makes or breaks it. And we were very conscious of how we talk in front of our kids. Not that we don't slip sometimes and just you get frustrated, right? But when we talk about not being able to go to do something, we say, well, that's okay. You know, we're going to go to the out to a park and we're going to go do this instead. And it's still going to be awesome. And for me, when you see young people that seem to like be jaded and have a lot of complaints about life, you wonder if it's because that's probably what they, how they heard their parents speak in their house, right. everything, or complaining about other people, being sarcastic about other people, right. or, you know, talking down about other people. That's what the, if that's all they hear, that's exactly the type of human being that's you're going to raise and that's going to leave exactly. your house one day.
Right.
So yeah, language is very, very, I'm not going to say it's everything because language without action means nothing.
Right.
You have to see you do it too. But yeah, when it comes to the things that we're talking about here, the reason that people are like that is because they heard their own family members talk like that about how people look all the time. Well, guess what? If that's all they hear, or you're staring at yourself in the mirror constantly,
right?
Or comparing, or mom comparing herself to some other person that they don't have the clothes that that person has, or they don't look the same, then that little girl is going to end up just like that. And there's exactly. nothing you can do about it if you right. keep speaking like that. So yeah, right. I think it's super important. It's something that we can all change Absolutely. In our own house.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, even just real quick, that was made me think, even when we like to work out, we work out all the time in our family. And I've always made sure that I'm careful with that language too. So it's not that I'm working out so I can get thinner. No. Mm-hmm. When my daughter was of the age to really start to notice, oh, why are you guys going to go work out? And because we want to be healthier.
Yeah.
We want to be healthier, you know, spiritually, mentally, physically, but it's not, something as simple as that, making sure that we're cautious with that language.
Absolutely.
And some people may not even think about that. So to wrap it up, what is one book that you would recommend for our listeners? Of course, other than your book.
Because we're recommending that one for you.
Yes, so. Second book and my first book. Is that count?
That's it.
You know, I read a lot of different books. But as I think about your listeners, I mean, it's probably, you guys have probably read it, but Sarah McClanahan's Teaching from Rest.
I've heard of it. I have not read it.
Yeah. You know, there's a workbook version, or maybe the book is a workbook. But that's the one that just kind of came to mind, because I feel like that kind of goes along with my message, right? Like, we're not teaching from a place of my kid has to be the best. My, you know, we have to succeed. We have to do all the things every day. I mean, we do classical model. Sometimes, like, we are in classical conversations, but sometimes classical model looks like, oh shoot, we're doing really an awful job with spelling, so I'm gonna just order a workbook off Amazon and we're just gonna go to that, right? Like, so I'm kind of a freestyler when it comes to homeschooling. But the teaching from rest concept is that, you know, just breathe, right? You don't have to, I mean, that's why we do this. We have freedom, right? We do this so that my kid, who is awesome in reading, can be at a fourth grade reading level, but who's not so awesome in math can be at a second grade math level. And I know by the time he gets to seventh grade, it's going to all balance out. right? Like we have the freedom to let them grow and excel in the areas where they're awesome and gonna do all the things, and work the hard of the areas where they struggle. So yeah, so that would be my recommendation.
Great.
All right, last question. So if you knew you could only leave one last piece of wisdom for your children, what would it be?
Yeah, I've been thinking about this. You know, I think it would be just enjoy life, stop chasing, right? Mm-hmm. Because I think a lot of us spend a lot of our lives chasing, right? Like, you know, we chase, like if you want to be married when you're single, you chase marriage, right? You chase the job, right? And then after you got the job and the marriage, maybe you go through a period where you're chasing like family, chasing having kids, right? You got that. And then it's like, we live life as if it's, you know, oh, we've got these milestones and then we'll have arrived. But anyone who's lived a little life starts to realize you hit the milestone. And guess what? There's, like you said earlier, there's a day after that milestone. Like you just, oh, it's just you. It's just you doing the same thing. So don't live life from milestone to milestone, chasing the next thing. Just enjoy life, rest, right? You know, just enjoy every day that God has given you. Live it with enough grace for that day, and just try to be who he created you to be, and not try to be anything better. Oh, well, not necessarily better, but anything different.
I love it.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's the disease of if only, if only.
Right. Right. Yep. If only, well, if when. Yep.
That's right. Well, I lied. One last question.
Okay.
where can our listeners find you?
You can reach me at Compared to Who in all social media channels, or my website is comparedtowho.me. And some of your homeschool parents are English grammar fiends who know that it should be compared to whom. So I just want to throw it out there that I do know grammar. I actually teach our grammar class at our co-op, but compared to whom sounded very uppity. I did not want to sound so stuffy. So we went with compared to who. So please forgive me for my grammar error and go to the site anyway, comparedtowho.me. And I'm compared to who is my podcast as well. So.
And then your books. Anywhere, pretty much.
Yep. All the places books are sold, Amazon, Walmart, Barnes and Noble, like all places books are sold online. And my latest release is The Burden of Better, How a Comparison-Free Life Leads to Joy, Peace, and Rest. And my first book is called Compared to Who. You might be sensing a theme there. And Amazon are all the places they're available.
Awesome. This was a wonderful conversation, Heather.
Oh, thank you guys. I enjoyed talking to you.
Yes. Take care.
Okay. Bye-bye.
We want to thank Heather for joining us today. This was a conversation that I think every family and married couple should have. It takes a conscious decision to be aware of this issue, and it is something that can affect our children in extreme ways. We want to thank all of you for joining us again for a great conversation. Please remember to visit our website to see all of our content at thehomeschoolprojectpodcast.com. And if you have any comments or suggestions, please write us at thehomeschoolprojectpodcast@gmail.com. And as always, let's light a fire they can't put out.